Evening has fallen. No one else can hear it. Men and women having sex in the dark, dingy alleys, groping one another. Be quiet, all of you. Hear me when I say this.
WFOD. Wheelbarrow full of dicks.
Hello and welcome to the Wheelbarrow Full of Dicks internet radio program. I am Mike, joined by my co-hosts, Napiers, and via Skype, Mr. Travis Hulse.
Travis Hulse.
How is everyone?
My dick itches.
We will be joined in a little while by the host narrator of the Fox television program Utopia, Mr. Dan Peraro.
I just want to say that he has an epic mustache.
He does. It's incredible. And he has a good collection of, like, cool hats, too.
He's like the quintessential villain in, like, a Hanna-Barbera cartoon.
but he is also a cartoonist known for the Bizarro comic strip, more than likely in your local newspaper. So we'll be talking with him in a little bit. But in the meantime, have you guys seen this thing about Russia sending the geckos into space to fuck?
Did it work?
You haven't seen this?
No.
Russia, to watch it?
Like the
Russia
gecko
was sitting around, and they were curious about what would happen if they sent lizards into space to fuck. They wanted to see, like, what the lizards would do in space, like how they would go about fucking each other. That was the whole point of the mission. The mating habits of geckos in space.
What good is that?
I don't know. What do you learn from that data? Like, what can you learn from it and say, oh, well, now we know this was totally worth sending technology into space to learn how geckos fuck there.
Well, I mean, you could at least get some hilarious YouTube videos out of it. I mean,
so what kind of craft did they send them up in? Was it like a shoebox size so they were forced to fuck? Or was it big enough where they could, like, both take their corners and stare off into space?
Oh, yeah, like a man-sized one where they may never find each other?
Yeah, they, like, just turn their backs to each other because one of, like, the girl pissed the guy off, so they're, like, on a standoff.
I think it was, like, one guy and three girls.
Oh, sweet!
Well, anyway, eventually, at some point, they lost contact with it, and then it came back to Earth. And when it came back to Earth, they were all dead. They all froze to death.
I thought you were going to say just the guy was dead.
So I'm not particularly sure what they learned from the geckos having sex with one another, but it must have been good, right?
You know what would have been really hilarious?
What?
If they had video of, like, the little geckos floating around in space and they can't find their footing and they're swimming around in the air. And then all of a sudden one of them farts and, like, kind of darts forward a little bit.
Wouldn't you just think they'd be confused? I mean, they'd be confused. They wouldn't know why they're floating all of a sudden.
Or why they're freezing to death.
Napier, can I ask you something? I know the answer from Mike. Napier, do you know who Benny Hill is?
Yes.
Mike does not know who Benny Hill is.
Why?
We've talked about this before and about how great Benny Hill is. But can you just imagine there's this one male lizard and these three plus female lizards in a spaceship, and him, like, with the Benny Hill music, like, chasing them around the pod, like, trying to bang them, and they're, like, hiding behind, like, control panels and shit, and he's, like, peeking around, and then the music plays again, and then he finally gets to fuck them.
Yeah, it would be great. He's floating around the cabin with this giant gecko boner, trying to go after these ladies like that Scream dude. But he just can't get them.
I still don't know why Mike doesn't know what Benny Hill is.
I mean, I know of the existence of Benny Hill. I don't think I've ever actually watched it. But, I mean, I know of Benny Hill.
So you know he's a man, but do you know he's a wonderful man who is sexist as shit and just trying to constantly bang women 40 years younger than him?
I did not know that.
Oh, it's great. That's... And he's fat.
He's just super fat and
so
old.
So he's your hero in a way.
Oh, yeah. I grew my tits in the shape of his so that I could emulate him to all the ladies. I even got a power move. It's like the Benny Hill music. Goes do 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 do.
You go to the doctor and they say you need to lose a few pounds, and you say, "Did Benny Hill lose a few pounds?" No.
They say no. Benny Hill died shit. Like a motherfucker.
Actually, did have a doctor tell me. He goes, "Do you know you're about 80 pounds overweight?" I said, "Yeah, but don't worry, most of it's my penis." He didn't think it was as funny because he started bringing up the diabetes and you know getting. Getting, you know, heart attacks.
Diabetes part two.
Mm-hmm. But I just don't like, nah, it's penis.
So, Travis, you went to a rock and roll concert?
Yeah, I went to a rock and roll fest. There's a, Madison has actually a really cool rock station, JJO. Usually every year they do something called the JJO Band Camp, which I've never been to. But when I went to that horror convention, I had to cancel on my 15-year-old boy on the comic book convention I was going to take him on in Chicago. And he said, "Oh, don't worry about it. You're going to meet one of your heroes. And it's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity." He's like, "But if this band that I love ever comes around here, you have to take me to that to make up for it." And I was like, "Oh, yeah, whatever."
He already knew that concert was happening.
He had to have, because not 3 days later, he was posting something to my Facebook page saying, "Hey, Dad, look what I found. They're either playing in Janesville, Wisconsin in September, or they're playing in Chicago in October." I'm like, "You fucker." I thought for sure he'd just forget about it. But he loves the band A Day to Remember, I think is the name of the band that he loves so well.
I'm not sure if I'm familiar with them.
I didn't think I was either, and then he played me some of their stuff. They've changed their styles. Like they've been around since like 2001. Yeah. When they were first around, they were like super hard. And the last couple of albums that they've had have been more like Avenged Sevenfold-y, where it's
so they,
you know,
sold out, is what you're saying.
No, I think it's just better music. You know, it's not just like screaming the entire time. It's like there's some screaming into singing, into ballads, into like actual music. You know, there's some of that metal shit that I can't get behind because it's just constantly growling and screaming with a heavy bass line, really loud drums, and guitars that don't make any sense.
I didn't know that there was a form of metal called attention deficit disorder. Yeah, we're just every metal. Fuck it.
So who else was there? Anybody of note?
Well, there was like I think there was like 12 bands there. It was Chris Jericho's band Fozzy was there early. And I'll tell you, I don't know what happened to him in the WWE, but
he's
that
still
motherfucker.
There.
Is he still in there?
He's still doing WWE stuff. I just saw him on TV the other day. I was
that
flipping channels. I was like, "Oh, look, Chris Jericho
is an unbelievable front man for a rock band."
I would think he would be. I don't know what his voice sounds like, but I would imagine he'd be good.
The band is pretty good. Like, the music is pretty good. He's got a good voice, but mostly it's just his crowd presence, man.
Yeah.
Like, he was jumping off of speakers, holding out the mic stand to everybody, like, just really engaging and just, like, really energetic and shit. He had to have been on a bunch of blow or something because dude was fucking on it. But it made it really entertaining. Like, the music was pretty good, but he was, like, he made that show kick ass. So that was well worth it. He was there, like Nonpoint was there, Bring Me the Horizon was there, Hatebreed was there.
I think there was a time in my life that I liked Nonpoint. I haven't kept up with them recently. They did the In the Air Tonight cover, didn't they?
I
think I bought that album.
So, I believe so. I saw them like 3 years back at that rock fest that I went to for like 4 years in a row.
Mm-hmm.
They were good and I liked them. No, it was good. It was his very first rock show that he had ever been to. So most of my enjoyment came from him experiencing like a rock festival.
Right.
You know, a bunch of adults who were fed alcohol and shoved rock music in their ears. It was during the day and he was like, "Oh, it's really kind of crazy. There's a lot of different type of people. There was older people and younger people." I'm like, yeah.
So you weren't the oldest people there?
Oh, no, I was not the oldest person there. Not by far. There was much older people there.
Yeah, the last couple I've gone to, I felt like I was one of the older ones there. I went to the most recent Point Fest alternative rock festival in St. Louis, and I was walking around, I was like, "Look at these goddamn kids." And I started thinking, you know, I think I might be getting too old for this.
By the time the last band came through, I absolutely felt like my kid's dad. You know what I mean? Like, my kid's dad took him to this concert, because the last two bands, like, we met some people and we were bullshitting, we were having a good time, and we talked Dylan, my boy, into crowd surfing.
Yeah.
15-year-old kid, I've never crowd surfed in my life and never would. But during Bring Me the Horizon, we were like, oh, you should crowd surf. And he's like, okay. So he hands me all his shit. He's like, I'm going to do it. And he's like, take all my stuff. But then he was like fidgeting the whole time in anticipation, like really nervous. And then we hoisted him up and he went all the way to the front of the crowd. And it was really cool. He came back all jacked up. But like in the middle of that show, the people that we were talking to had left, and I was talking to him, and I had to use the bathroom and wanted to get another beer. And I told him, I'm like, I'm going to use the bathroom. I'm not going to come back through all this stuff to find you again. So I'll be on the outskirts when this show is done. And he's like, oh, I'll probably still be in here for the next show. I'm like, that's fine. Maybe I'll see you then. So then the next show started. You know, everybody like dissipated after that show was done. So I went in by him and I'm like, hey, how's it going? Good show? He's like, oh yeah, real good. So then the band that he was there for, A Day to Remember, they started up and it was really great. And I had to use the pisser again. And I wanted another drink. And I said to him, I'm like, yeah, so I'm going to use the bathroom and get a drink. And I'm probably not going to come back into this through all of these people. So for the last, like, I don't know, like 25 minutes of the last show, I'm just standing on the outskirts watching the extremely drunk children and like just the crowd jump up and down and thinking, there's no fucking way that I'm going to do that anymore.
That just looks like way too much work.
So yeah, I've always been my ass off and get bounced off of somebody's shoulders.
I've always been a sit in a seat and watch a show kind of guy. I've never been a participate in the madness kind of guy. My first rock concert was 1994. My mom took me to go see the Smashing Pumpkins.
My first outdoor rock concert was that Point Fest you made me go to that I had a horrible time at and wanted to leave.
Oh yeah, Napier is not good at concerts. Napier wants to leave pretty soon after he gets there. We drove to Kansas City one time to see a concert, and Napier wanted to leave after like the third band. It was an all day like radio festival thing, and Napier had to crap, and he didn't want to crap in the Johnny on the Spots, so he wanted to go home. I was like, drove to Kansas City, Napier.
Yeah, we were there.
You're gonna have to poop somewhere in public.
We were there. We were there, and then you go home. I mean, that's the series of events.
After the third band.
Yeah, after like 10 hours.
The three bands that play 30 minutes each.
Oh, that's God. That's why you have to prep ahead. And I told the kid too. I said, you know, because we live like 2.5 hours from where that concert was, you know, and I had taken my morning crap early, and I had to drop my little children off at the mother-in-law's, and then we were going to take the drive down there, and we left about 12:30, and I told them, I'm like, hey, unless you want to shit in porta potties, you should probably do that before we leave, you know. And I did, like, right before we left, and I had to get my kids ready. I'm like,
well, you're a vet.
Yeah, and that's what you got to teach. You got to teach our younger generation those kind of things.
Napier did not learn at all. I made Napier stay until Buck Cherry, when Buck Cherry played Crazy Bitch.
Crazy Bitch,
and all the broads went crazy. Like a broad grabbed a handful of my ass. Like a stranger grabbed a handful of my ass during Crazy Bitch.
Yeah, they go nuts during that song.
Because Crazy Bitch, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, okay, a broad just grabbed a handful of my ass. I mean,
and gave you kissy face.
Yeah, I mean, this is a thing that happened, so I guess we can leave now, because then I mean, something happened at the concert that I can tell people about. That's time a stranger grabbed a handful of my ass.
Actually, Buck Cherry was the only part of that whole thing that I actually enjoyed. Shinedown was totally shit.
Yeah, they were kind of up their own ass.
How long ago was that?
I mean, it was when Crazy Bitch was a thing.
Oh, so probably before Shinedown was anybody? It probably had 45 was out?
Yeah, 45 was their big song.
So it was before Sound of Madness.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, yeah, because I had seen them at a fair, like a county fair, They were one of the entertainment for one of the nights, and we went to that, and it was the first time that I had heard anything from the Sound of Madness, and it was unbelievable. And then right after that, they got super huge, and you couldn't see them unless it was a huge venue.
The greatest part of that whole thing was when that dumbass got up on stage and told everybody to dance and twirl around.
And when you feel the wind in your hair, that's your friend.
Yeah.
Like your friend that has died, like calling to you and saying, hey.
Who said that?
I miss you. Shinedown guy.
No, he didn't. Yes, was that when he was still fat?
He wasn't fat.
He wasn't fat. Is he fat?
He was, and then he got like super skinny and like kind of scrawny guy buff.
Well, guys, thank you for being with us. This is a lot of fun. We're having a good time. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with our guest, Dan Pararo.
I wish I was the Furnacast. Oh my god, we love the Furnacast. Dan Furnacast, oh he's so awesome. Oh Dan's so cool. Oh Dan's so awesome. Punk rock podcast. And this is very punk rock.
The Furnacast, live Monday, 8-7 Central on RadioFubar.com. Available on Stitcher and iTunes.
Are you there, screaming in the night, somewhere, hanging from the side, feel the sunlight on my face, it's cold out here, lost in outer space. So you know, you will always be the hardest thing I will let go. Driving past your church and all the houses in a row, feeling in my chest is fire, broken glass and wire. See me smile. Thinking of the days, light reflecting in your eyes was never the same. I wanna lie down, I wanna ride in your car. You can take me anywhere, roll us into heaven, I don't care.
Our guest tonight is Dan Pararo, the host of the television show Utopia, found Tuesdays and Fridays on Fox. Dan also is a cartoonist known primarily for his strip Bizarro, which you can see now at bizarrocomics.com. Dan, thank you for being here.
Well, you're very welcome. I hope to enjoy myself.
You hope to?
I hope to.
That's good. I like that optimistic attitude.
Yes, it remains to be seen. I mean, you guys might be complete dicks. I don't know.
There's a good chance.
No, I think it'll be fine. I'm sure we'll have a dandy time.
I was going through your blog just a little bit because I was enjoying what is. You seem to really, truly appreciate your hate mail.
I do. Yeah, it's my favorite thing. It's only the stupid hate mail. I mean, you know, like legitimate hate mail is not any fun, but really stupid hate mail is just, there's nothing funnier.
So you don't like when it really hits home. You like it when it's absurd.
Yeah, like, well, you know, like, one time I did a cartoon about somebody committing suicide by hanging or something, and then I got a very sad story from a mother who lost her teenage son and asked if I just wouldn't put that kind of thing in my comic anymore, and that was just painful, you know, and I agreed. I've never done a hanging cartoon ever since, you know. So there's, like, certain kinds of mail like that that's not, you know. But
You retired hangings forever.
Yeah, I did. I just didn't. I thought, you know what, there's other ways to depict things like that, and there's who knows how many people out there that have lost somebody to that kind of suicide, so I just won't do it, you know. No skin off my nose. But yeah, the really stupid stuff is just hilarious.
Is there one that stands out as your absolute favorite all-time hate mail received?
I've got quite a few favorites. There was one guy that wrote me some hate mail about a cartoon I did on St. Patrick's Day that he felt was making fun of the Irish. So that we're still a minority group of some kind. and then he went on to, like, really brutally and indelicately compare it to, would you show Jews hoarding money? Would you show American Indians getting drunk in the streets? Would you show blacks with their malt liquor 45s, you know? So
did you reply, yes?
It's just like, he goes, why? Because if not, why are the Irish open to such ridicule and scorn? And it's just a fucking joke about St. Patrick. I mean, it was just ridiculous.
The whole holiday is based around a bunch of, you know, there's the Irish tradition of getting hammered and drinking green beer. I mean, obviously, we've co-opted that as Americans to make it that more so than anything, but still.
Yeah, and basically that was the gist of the cartoon, was that St. Patrick's Day started out, I mean, who knows what, you know, why it started out or how, but now it's just an excuse for people to get drunk and vomit in the streets.
I think it was something about the Irish, like, beating snakes with sticks or something like that. Well, I think that's legitimate.
Yeah, St. Patrick supposedly drove all of the snakes out of Ireland. Magically. I guess that was his miracle. driving the snakes out of Ireland, which probably immediately gave them one hell of a rat problem. even if it had happened. You know, so it's just... It's just one of those ancient religious myths that turned into a drunken, you know, reason to get drunk. Much like Halloween, you know, Halloween is originally a religious holiday.
It's a pagan holiday.
Yeah, well, it was a Catholic holiday. I mean, it was a pagan holiday that was co-opted by the Catholics. So many of these things. But Christmas was a pagan holiday co-opted by the Catholics as well. So was Easter.
So let me ask you, like, you get this hate mail. Does it feel good that your stuff is seen by enough people for people to actually get outraged about the cartoons that you do?
Well, I mean, in theory it would, yeah. When I get hate mail, it doesn't necessarily reassure me that a lot of people are seeing my cartoons because there's just so many fucking idiots in the world. There's just so many.
You just have to really think about the logistics of how difficult and how long someone who isn't a fan of yours, that isn't, like, already connected to you on Facebook or something like that, what they have to go through after seeing your comic strip. I mean, they have to, like, they have to Google your name, probably. They have to click on several links to find a contact. They have to type something up. I mean, wouldn't you just get bored looking for it and give up? I mean, somebody feels that strongly about it that they have to find you and tell you what they think.
That is actually exactly what I always think. Like, how difficult, how much time did you spend trying to find me just to tell me that you're offended by a silly drawing that I made and put in the newspaper?
You put a white beard on Godzilla and made a god joke.
Yeah. It's not the news. It's the comics page. You know, it's like, it's not. I mean, really, do you? And I often will ask them when people get really vitriolic with me. I will sometimes say, "Do you put this much effort into a letter to your senator or congressman ever, or anybody else who can make a difference in the world? I'm just a cartoonist."
Yeah, you have to wonder if they just send letters all day to people that have wronged them in some way, or if they've just singled you out.
Yeah, it's like
you've hit them on that level.
Yeah.
You've been a cartoonist for, what, 30-ish years, like, professionally?
Well, Bizarro has been syndicated. Well, this coming January, it will have been syndicated for 30 years. So the 30th anniversary is January 2015.
When did you decide that that's what you wanted to do for, like, a job?
30 years and 6 months ago.
Were you doing other things, though? Like, when you finally realized that you could actually make some money being a cartoonist, were you, working side jobs and trying to get into the business, or?
I got syndicated when I was 25 or 6, around about there. I went to, so I'll just give you a real quick update of what happened before that. I had a fine arts scholarship out of high school, and I went to college on a fine arts scholarship. I hated it, and I quit after one semester. So, I'm 18 years old, I have nothing to do with my life and no education. It wasn't the best plan I ever had.
So you wouldn't suggest going to school as an artist?
It depends on what you want to learn. You don't need to. In terms of, you know, nobody's ever going to ask you. I mean, when it comes to the arts, no one's ever going to ask you if you have a degree or give a shit whether you do or not.
Sure.
So, and I knew that, you know, and I thought, well, I want to be an artist and I don't really need this and I'm not learning what it is that I want to know. Most of what I wanted to know was technique. You know, I wanted to learn a lot of different ways to use a lot of different medium. Like, I badly wanted to learn how to sculpt in stone, but that's not something they were teaching in the mid-70s.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to learn more about just the techniques of oil painting, of various kinds of printing, of, you know, just all kinds of, you know, the technical kind of stuff that you don't learn at home in your bedroom drawing, which is what I had been doing my entire life. But they weren't really doing that. I mean, they were teaching us theory. And I, quite honestly, to this day, and I'm not being arrogant, to this day, I don't mind missing the theory stuff because I've always known what it was that I wanted to accomplish. What I wanted to know was how to get there, what exact materials to use, how do I make sure that this isn't going to fall off the canvas in 30 years, or whatever, you know. So those are the kind of things I wanted to know. I didn't want to know about design theory and shit. I had sort of innately had tons of that. It's just in my genetic makeup. I was already good with that kind of thing.
Well, and I think theory essentially, I mean, is examining other people's works. But I mean, if you're into the arts, or if you want a career in the arts, or if you want to convey something, there's not really anybody else's theory that's going to influence your work, right? I mean, you have something that you want to say, and you're going to convey it.
Yeah, but I mean, it certainly can. And I mean, I'm heavily influenced by classical artists. And if they'd been teaching that kind of theory, I probably would have stayed. But at the time, I went to art school in the mid-70s, and at the time they were really big on conceptual art. And so if you produced anything that was at all recognizable, you would get a C. and if you brought in a bag of broken glass and poured it on the floor and handed the teacher a piece of paper with like a paragraph of bullshit about what it means about society, you would get an A. I'm fucking serious. That is literally what happened.
That reminds me of that scene in that movie Ghost World, where she's in that summer art class and she brings in this really, you know, detailed, thought out picture that she had made, and then she got like a C-, and then her classmate brought in a tampon and a teacup and ended up getting like an A+ and praised by the teacher because it meant like women's liberation and.
Yeah, well, Dan Close probably went to art school about the same time I did, because that's exactly what was happening on a daily basis. That's the kind of stuff that they were teaching at the time, for the most part. Not every single class, but primarily that was what they were aiming at. And so I was not only bored, but I was offended. I just, like, I'm just not going to pay money for this nonsense. And after all these years, now I'm an old man, and I'm a much I'm much more experienced. My mind is broader. I'm much more open minded. I accept a lot of things now that I didn't understand the thought or process behind when I was young, or the point behind. But I still can't stand conceptual art. It's just not for me. I never will understand it. I couldn't care less about conceptual art. You know, I mean, that kind of stuff. I don't even know. It's a cross between advertising and fine art. You know, it's a way of bamboozling the public into thinking there's something there when there's not. It's the emperor's new clothes.
You almost always have to wonder if they're full of shit or if they actually believe what they're making is. I mean, Kanye West, for instance. You have to wonder if Kanye West is just screwing with us.
I don't follow that kind of music enough to even know. I wouldn't know a Kanye West song if it was playing right now.
Well,
I just don't follow that kind of music, so I don't even know what he's doing. Is he doing something like that?
Well, it's just he's so over the top, you know, it just in the way that he talks and presents himself that you almost have to wonder, is he for real or is he screwing with us?
Yeah. Well, there's a painting in the Kentish Museum. It might be the Museum of Modern Art, but there's a painting that's just solid black. It's fairly famous, and it's entitled Paris at Night. And in what other art form can you get away with that bullshit?
Just painting a canvas black and saying, no, this means something.
Yeah, they call it Paris at Night. And it's in a museum. This is not a gallery. This is a museum. Now, what if you went to the library, or what if you went to a bookstore and you pull out a big novel, it's 800 pages long, and you open it up and you find that the author has put one word on each page and they're completely disconnected and there is no storyline whatsoever. The whole thing is basically blank with a single word on each page. Well, let's make it even more like conceptual art. Let's make it a single letter on each page and it doesn't spell anything. Could you get away with that? I mean, can you imagine a world in which that would be revered and eventually entered into a library? This is a great author of the 20th century. It's just nonsense. You can't do it with music, you can't do it with theater, you can't do it with film, you can't do it with music, but you can do it with graphic arts for some reason. You can get away with that kind of crap. I'll never understand it.
Painting a picture of a tomatoes, Campbell's soup can and saying it's about consumerism?
Well, you know, that at least, you know, that I actually can, you know, that's not as conceptual, that's like not too far for me. I get that.
Okay.
You know? Let's take this label that everybody is so used to looking at and kind of, you know, presented in a different way, because there is, you know, I mean, artists, I've done this before. I've gone through a grocery store and looked at a label and just stared at it and thought, wow, that's actually a really beautiful little piece of design and art and color. I love this label. And it's especially true when you go to I don't know if you guys ever travel internationally, if you go to a foreign grocery store, the labels are fascinating because they don't make sense to you on a consumer level, you know.
It's just based on design.
Wow, look at these color and art and design. I have no idea what it says. I don't even know what's in this can or bottle or box, but it's just cool looking. I love this. You know, so there are aspects, you know, that's not even, you know, so I'm just talking about the stuff that is just really blatantly bullshit. You know, I can get behind Warhol. Now, when I quit art college, I could not, I was not a Warhol fan. I thought that at the time that too was crap. So, like I say, I have opened my mind over the years. Who knows? Maybe if I live long enough, maybe I'll eventually understand a black canvas called Paris at Night. I don't know.
So we're going back. I did a cartoon about that one time
and about that exact painting. And I think the two people looking at it, one of them says, friends don't let friends paint drunk. I think that was what I said. Anyway, not that good. Cut that out of the show. It's not funny.
So going back, you said you got syndicated at like 25, 26. Were you working like a full-time job then and just doing the cartoon on the side? And then it got picked. How did it get picked up? And was that when you decided you were able to actually, you know, do this for a living?
Yeah, what I did was I just got a crap job somewhere, and then I little by little managed to kind of finagle myself into some commercial art, and I met an older guy who already had a pretty good illustration business going, and he needed some assistance, and so I kind of became his apprentice. You know, he paid me to help him out on commercial art, and by doing that, I learned the commercial art business and how that kind of stuff. And then I started making a pretty good living as a commercial artist, but it was very low end stuff. We were illustrating, you know, potato chips and American Airlines and ads and, you know, drawing planes, things like that. So it was sure. really, it wasn't like great commercial art. It was just, you know, like that kind of stuff. Very commercial art. And I didn't like it, but it was better than an office job. And that was what drove me to, at some point I saw an article in People magazine, of all places, something I never read, and still don't, about Kathy Geiswite and the cartoon strip Kathy, which I had never been a huge fan of because I'm not a woman and I'm not crazy about her drawing style. So
that was the one that was all about shopping, wasn't it?
She was crazy about shopping,
right?
Yeah, it was very much a women's kind of strip. All of the topics were about fitting into a bikini and troubles with a boyfriend and shopping and stuff like that. Anyway, but the article made it sound so easy. Leave it to People magazine. I was writing letters to my mom and drawing little pictures at the bottom, and she sent those pictures to Universal Press, and they gave me a huge contract, and now I'm a millionaire. It was kind of like that kind of an article, which was not exactly how it happened, but it was more or less kind of, you know, I mean, at the time I thought, well, hell, I could do that. <You know? laughs> So I just started drawing cartoons and sending them off to the syndication companies. It took me a couple of years, but I ended up getting a deal with a small syndication company called Chronicle Features that no longer, but they're the same. This is the same. They were very small. They only carried one comic at a time. And then they had about 10 journalists, you know, columnists. And that was all that they specialized in. They were not a huge syndicate at all. But they were the same people that discovered and started Gary Larson and The Far Side about five years before I got started. And at the time, in fact, I had not even seen The Far Side yet. I was working in the commercial art field. You know, one of my friends said, "Hey, you should look at this. Look at this cartoon called The Far Side. This is pretty weird and funny. Maybe newspapers are, you know, maybe you should send your stuff to newspapers." Because my attitude has always been, "Well, newspapers are they're only printing like Dennis the Menace, you know, or Family Circus. I'm not going to get anywhere with that because my cartoons were kind of weird." So somebody said, "Look, there's this thing called The Far Side, which is weird, so maybe they are buying weird stuff." So I thought, "Oh, cool. Well, I guess I'll try to send some stuff off to the same syndicate that syndicates in and see what happens." And about a year later, he actually jumped to a larger syndicate. His contract with them was up, and he went to a larger syndicate, and they hired me. So that was how I got my start.
So that can't be the business anymore, though. Like, you can't just be a cartoonist and send your unsolicited work into a syndicate and hope that they pick it up, right? I mean, this is obviously way different.
Actually, you still can, and you always have been able to. You don't need an agent or anything. You just send it in. And they'll, you know, it's because it's not hard for them to look at cartoons.
Sure.
You know, like, if you want to get a book published or something, you know, and it takes people a long time to read book manuscripts, so they've created this whole big wall that you have to get through. Same with scripts in Hollywood and all that kind of stuff. But in the cartoon syndication business, to this day, you can still just send your cartoons in and have them reviewed. Of course, nowadays, in the old days, they used to launch like 10 or 15 new features every year. Most of them wouldn't make it past a year or so, but the ones that made it, you know, would last and be in the paper for a long time. Nowadays, there's only about 5 syndicates left, and they all launch maybe one per year. And maybe one out of those 5 total will make it, just because the newspaper industry is shrinking and becoming less lucrative all the time. So
of course, you still essentially just see Hagar and Garfield pretty much in Family Circus in the newspaper cartoon section.
Mm-hmm.
Marmaduke.
I haven't seen a Marmaduke strip in a long time.
Marmaduke gone?
No, it's still out there, man. There's still the I think it's the son of the guy that originated it is now doing
damn
it. And
big
even
dog
he,
still getting in trouble.
And even he's an older guy, the son. But yeah, but once your cartoon becomes kind of a standard in newspapers, they can almost, you know, it's very hard for them to cancel you because so many people complain. They're just like, "What? The world is changing. No more Marmaduke? Stop. Don't tell me that." You know, they will complain and Yeah, so that it's very hard for young cartoonists. But in another way, it's much easier because they have the interweb now. And on the interwebs, you can put up your own site, put up your own cartoons, and actually build a following. It's not a particularly lucrative thing to do, but at least you can get your stuff out there in ways that you couldn't in the past. So that aspect is better, I think, for younger cartoonists.
Sure, and there's been a few success stories. I mean, Boondocks, was Boondocks a syndicated strip before Cartoon Network picked it up and, you know, made an animated show about it? I know it was pretty big before they actually did pick it up, but was that an online launch?
I don't think so. I think it was a straight syndication like in the very late 90s, before the internet cartoons really took off. But, you know, there's things like The Oatmeal. There's a guy that mm-hmm. just does internet cartoons. And he makes a fortune just because he has millions of people click in every day. And so he makes a lot of money off advertising. And there's a handful of people that have done that. But it's probably no less likely than it has been in the past to make millions off of a newspaper cartoon strip, you know, because even the ones in the newspaper, they don't really reach those upper echelons of making millions of dollars unless they are highly licensed. They turn it like Garfield, you know, they become a standard in every newspaper in North America, and they sell, and they start selling, you know, all kinds of stuffed dolls and animals and t-shirts and.
Did you happen to see that documentary about the creator of Calvin and Hobbes?
Yeah, I think I was actually in that.
Were you in that?
was it Dear Mr. Watterson?
Yes, yes.
Yeah. I'm actually in that somewhere. I did an interview. They used a couple of.
Yes, you were towards the end when they were talking to a bunch of different cartoonists and about their syndication. Yes, you were.
Yeah, I haven't
Mike,
seen
Mike,
it.
Mike, take this out of the. Take this
oh,
out
okay,
of the
I'll take all this out.
No, it doesn't bother me. I haven't actually seen the movie. I have a copy of it, but I haven't seen it yet.
It's really
the
good.
The funny thing, I've heard that. I hear that I'm also they included more of me in the extras section of that DVD, because the thing was that I was never a huge Calvin and Hobbes fan, and I think I was the only cartoonist they interviewed who wasn't.
Sure.
And I don't have negative things to say about him. I just wasn't effusive. And so I didn't make not too many of my comments made the normal part of the film.
I forgot who it was. It's somebody who, I wish I could remember who it was. There was an article that I read about, Bill Watterson did, like a week of somebody's, he drew it for somebody for like a week. And, it wasn't too long ago. And it was a really interesting article. It was really funny.
Yeah, that was Pearls Before Swine.
Oh, that's it.
Yeah, that's what it was. Yeah. Yep. I guess the only reason I brought it up was because you were talking about licensing and how to make a kajillion dollars off your syndicated strip. When I think the end product of that documentary was saying that, you know, a lot of people would like to hug a Calvin and Hobbes doll, but he was never one to license that property. I mean, he held it dear to his heart, obviously, and didn't want it to be.
Well, he licensed Calvin to be peeing on the back of everybody's car, right?
That was totally unlicensed.
That's the weirdest thing about Bill Watterson is the only thing he ever licensed was pickup truck decals.
He also came up with those testicles that hang from the hitch on the pickup trucks. He did the same thing.
I've always wondered who came up with those. The thing about him is that he was in so many newspapers and made so much money off of book sales that he never needed the license. You know, he was already a multimillionaire. So
sure.
And he's also kind of a peculiar dude. You know, he's a real hermit. He doesn't do interviews or anything, and I think he thinks a lot more of his cartoon strip than most of us do. I mean, to me, it's a way to make a living. And for him, it was kind of a religion. You know, he really took it very, very seriously. I'm not criticizing that. I'm just saying that's my mentality. Somebody wants to market something from Bizarro. Sure, fine. Can we make some money off of it? Sure, fine. Let's do it. And most cartoonists are like that. You know, it's a job.
Well, it doesn't detract anything from your original art either. I mean, if you license something, you know, the original idea is still intact.
Right, yeah, exactly.
Well, have you seen, like, an uptick in interest? Like, have you been getting more stuff, more attention for your comic strip due to your being on network television 2 days a week?
My Facebook my face, more people are joining my Facebook, and I have more Twitter followers, stuff like that. I mean, not that it means anything, but, you know, more viewers on my blog. So, yeah, it's kind of a weird, yeah. I mean, that's a weird thing about TV is that, you know, I spend 29 and a half years being as clever and creative as I possibly can be. And then, you know, I get X
now,
amount
now
of
Now you're
fans.
A reality TV star.
Yeah, and then suddenly I'm narrating a reality TV show, and it quadruples my profile.
Well, it's such
just,
an
that's just a weird thing about American about human society, not American society. It's just a weird thing about human society.
Just wait till you're on Dancing with the Stars.
I would actually kind of dig that. That would be such a weird, campy thing to do.
It really
like,
would.
I don't watch that show, but I would be on it, Dancing with the Stars. I would be on that show. I just think it would be hilariously fun.
So how does this whole thing happen? You kind of carved out a thing for yourself. You'd make cartoons. You're a cartoon guy. How do you become the host of this show?
It's very weird.
Not just a show, like a highly ambitious show for Fox, right? I mean, it's a huge bet.
Yeah, it is. It is kind of the biggest, most expensive reality show ever launched, I think. It's a weird story, but I'll tell it to you as quickly as possible. I was speaking at Comic-Con three years ago. I think it was the summer of 2012. And I met this guy who was a fan of Bizarro for years, but he also happened to be an Emmy-winning reality show producer. And he actually wanted to try to do a reality show about me and my life. And we chatted, and at first I was like, nah, I really don't want a bunch of cameras following me around like this reality show thing. You know, I don't watch a lot of those kind of shows. I just don't think I would enjoy that. And anyway, he kind of talked me into it. And we came up with a kind of a pretty interesting idea, I think, and we pitched it to, and Travel Channel ended up buying it. And they gave us money to shoot a pilot. We shot a pilot and they loved it. But then they said, oh, we love the pilot, but the president of Travel Channel decided not to do these kind of shows anymore, so sorry. And that's like such a common story in Hollywood, you wouldn't believe. There's like 100 shows that get picked up for every one that actually ends up on the air.
What was the concept of the show?
Basically it was me traveling around the country visiting my stranger fans and their strange lives and the strangest things in their community.
Awesome.
Yeah, I thought it would be kind of fun. Just sort of like the bizarre side of America and that sort of thing. It didn't pan out, and I was fine with that. I wasn't positive I wanted to do it anyway. So it didn't pan out, and that was fine. And he and I remained friends. And then, you know, we just didn't do anything about it for another year and a half or so. And then this past summer, he called me and said, I'm working on this new reality show for Fox called Utopia. And I'd never heard of it. I didn't know anything about it. And he said, and they're looking for a narrator, just somebody to do voiceover to kind of follow the action of the show. And they're looking for somebody unusual, and they're auditioning like over 100 people, so don't get your hopes up. But I thought, you know, I like your voice and I like your attitude on social commentary and things like that. And I just thought, you know, you might be an interesting fit for the show, something new and different. Maybe you'd like to audition. And I said, oh, sure, yeah, I'll do an audition tape. So I did an audition tape and I sent it in. They liked it. I made it to the next round and they liked it and they wanted another one. And I made it to the next round and they wanted another audition tape. Anyway, I made it all the way to the end, and they finally said, okay, you're the guy. We're going to hire you as a narrator. I was like, oh, cool. I'm stoked. This is great. And that was all it was supposed to be. So I started recording stuff for the show. It was before the Utopians, the pioneers, as we call them.
Yeah.
It was before the pioneers entered Utopia. I was doing a lot of sort of pre-production kind of stuff. A week before the premiere, they said, you know, we need to warm the show up a little bit with somebody talking right into the camera. Maybe we put because they don't have they don't interview the people in the cast, you know. They, in fact, they have no contact with the people in the cast. That's what makes this actually a reality show as opposed to every other reality show.
Excellent. There's no confessionals where they can talk shit about somebody in front of camera.
and they're not being followed around by camera crew. They're not being those other shows. I'll be honest with you, those other shows are reasonably scripted. People aren't memorizing lines, but they basically go in and say, okay, in this scene, you come in and get mad at her because she left the dishes in the sink. and then they let those two ad lib that way, and then they shoot it, and if they don't like it, they'll shoot it again.
right.
So it's not as real as people think. But in this case, this is totally real. I mean, these people don't redo anything, and there's no contact with the production crew at all.
So there isn't any cameramen walking around at all?
It's all shot with robot cameras. There's 130 robot cameras on the property. There's literally not one place that you can stand on that property where you are not on camera.
Sounds like the Truman Show.
It is. It's very much like the Truman Show. Everybody says that. It is. It truly is. And they're all wearing microphones. They're bound by contract to wear microphones. Other than that, they're not bound by contract to do anything other than wear microphones all the time, you know? So whatever happens, happens. And they call through, God knows how many millions of miles of videotape every week to put together the highlights for that week's show.
So they just sit around and, like, watch in shifts and say, hey, something kind of fun happened at 8 o'clock?
Yeah, there's a compound about an eighth of a mile away from the Utopia site. There's a compound of buildings, you know, it's sort of like prefab buildings that they put up just for this, and there is so much electronics in there, and literally almost always 100 people working inside those buildings as the 15 people are doing what they're doing inside, just watching everything, listening to everything, logging it, documenting it, you know, editing it, you name it.
This was the first week that I really noticed it, but it, like last night's episode, they said, oh, you know, September 8th. I'm like, that's just last week.
Yeah, I was wondering that. So there's not really anything that's like already been filmed in the can. It's kind of, this is what happened this week.
Oh, yeah. It's all happening on the fly. And, in fact, I record my voiceover and my own camera stuff. I record it the day before it airs.
Wow.
So, in fact, I'll be on set tomorrow recording Friday night's show.
So you better not get sick or anything.
Oh, yeah. No, I got to go around with Purell. In fact, I just wear gloves full of Purell now. I don't let anybody touch me anymore. So back to the story. A week before the show aired, they said maybe we need a human touch. What if we put the narrator on camera? And my friend John, who was one of the producers, there's like five executive producers or maybe more, I don't remember, but my friend John says, because this came from the executives, you know, like the Fox executives at some point, said, let's put somebody on camera. What about the narrator? And John goes, have you seen this guy? He doesn't look like Ryan Seacrest. He's not your typical Fox narrator. And they're like, no, that's cool. Let's do a screen test and see what we think. So they tested me and a few other people, and they ended up liking me. And they ended up, and then boom, there I was.
There was a chance that you would have gotten the gig and then not gotten the gig.
Yeah. That's very true. I mean, I had been auditioning for months, and they finally handed me the gig, and I signed the contract. And I thought, oh, this is fantastic. And then they're like, maybe we'll put him on camera. But wait a minute. You know, I thought they easily could have just yanked the carpet right off under my feet at the last minute.
That's a renegotiation. That's an on-camera bump, though, right? So that's got to be great news.
Yeah, they pay you more money for being on camera than just being a voice. So that was, it was all great news. I thought it was cool. I've done a lot of stand-up comedy and public speaking and stuff, and I've always, you know, I enjoy that kind of thing. I was happy to be on camera. I was thrilled with it. So I was just kind of surprised and amazed that they picked me after all that. So boom, there I was. I didn't have an agent. I didn't have a headshot, nothing. I wasn't trying to get on TV, but bam, all of a sudden I'm on TV. So it was very surreal. I still trying to wrap my head around it, to be honest.
I know it's pretty fresh, but is it something that you're interested in doing, like voiceover work? Because you do have a very interesting voice. Like, I could see you on, like, Adventure Time or something as a character. Is that something that that you're doing it, something that you'd be interested in pursuing?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. That's the coolest thing about this, is that it gets my foot in the door. It enables me to now audition for other interesting things like cartoon voices or whatever. And I've always sort of been interested in that, but I've always had a million other things to do, so I never pursued it. I didn't know how to get into that. end of show business, or any end of show business, really. So the fact that this fell into my lap gives me an opportunity. It opens doors that I would not have been able to open previously, and it'll most certainly lead to other auditions and things. So yeah, I'm really stoked about it. I'm hoping it's a second career for me.
Do you worry that everybody's going to settle into like a routine and get really boring?
Yeah.
Pioneers on the show?
Yeah, I mean, if everybody will just, get their job and then just like go to work in the morning and then come home and go to bed and not do anything entertaining.
I don't know. I mean, anything can happen, really, but it's such a pressure cooker in there. They got to find a way to make a living, They're not just being given food. They were given a certain amount of food to start out with, but now they've got to find a way to create commerce, They've got to start making money and buying their own food, and the winter's coming. None of them brought coats or blankets. and it actually they're filming kind of up in Canyon Country outside of Los Angeles, and while in the daytime it's in the summertime it's like 100, 103, 105, they have no air conditioning. At nighttime it drops down a lot, and in the wintertime it goes down into the low 30s, like it'll even freeze. So they haven't been eating a lot much food. They're stuck with each other. They have no contact with their friends or family. They have no contact with the outside world in terms of internet, email, anything like that. Smartphones, nothing like that. So it's a peculiar.
They'll probably find things to create drama about. You won't have to like send in a guy in a bear suit or something.
Well, I guess my point is I don't think they'll have to. I think that the kind of pressure that they're under is just going to lead to its own drama.
I think I'm a pretty normal guy. I have like two little children and almost a grown child and a wife and a regular job. And Mike is a pretty normal guy too. But I think if you threw me and Mike in a house and said, "Figure out how you're going to eat and survive for, however many months," I think I would lose my mind if you took away my DVR and my NFL football and my Facebook and Twitter and my internet, my eBay. I would lose my mind. So I would probably turn into a different person and create drama.
Exactly, and that's what's happening. Yeah, right off the bat, no television, forget it. I'm not going there. I wouldn't do that. There's no music.
Don't even win anything.
Right, and they don't win anything.
Dan, so the question is, why are any of those people on that show?
Exactly. Well, that's probably a slightly different answer for each of them, and I'm not going to guess.
Nor should
you. They're all kind of passionate about trying to change the world in some way. They all. What lured each one of these people into it was an idea that they could somehow change the way society works, because that's the premise of the show, is that they're trying to build a better society. So, everything from government to commerce to do they have agreements or do they have laws? There's a lot of questions to be answered within the compound, and that's the kind of, all these people are passionate in one way or another about things that they think are wrong with the world and that they want to change.
So really, if they think if they can do it on TV and in a national audience can see that this idea will work with 30 people, it can definitely work with, say, our entire country or the regional governments or whatever.
Yeah, I think that's kind of the premise that they're all working under is hoping that they can come up with something that will improve the country. So, whether this is the best way to do it or not, you could argue until you're blue in the face. But I think that's the motivation for a lot of these guys. So yeah, but I couldn't do it. Most people couldn't do it.
No.
I'm surprised. Dave. They've already lost several members. I mean, ex-convict Dave walked out. I mean, he's been in prison twice. He's been homeless in New York City for a number of years, and this was something he couldn't deal with.
Yeah, he made it like 6 days.
Yeah, well, I think that, you can't, I don't think that it says something negative about him as much as it says something about how difficult it is.
Right, yeah, absolutely.
To cooperate with other people that you don't know in a situation like this. It's not an easy thing that these people are trying to do. And just like we've been saying, it's not for everybody. I mean, I wouldn't. People keep asking me, would you be able to? You know, no, I wouldn't. I wouldn't even try. I wouldn't go in there.
Well, they don't know what you look like. Could you, like, go in for a yoga lesson and just kind of, you know, infiltrate, see if you could stir stuff up?
I've actually thought about that. That would be sort of fun. But I doubt the production crew would allow that. They'd allow me to go in for yoga. But
you know where the cameras are. You could turn and give, like, the cameras a little wink.
Yeah. Well, they actually know where the cameras are, too. They're basically just, like, hanging on trees and on posts. Yeah, they're just everywhere. So they're totally aware of where all the cameras are. They know that.
But, they turned off the toilet cam, right? You can't just go watch a bunch of people make toilet, right? Because Chuck Berry got in trouble for that.
Yeah, I would hope that. I'm sure that's not going to be part of the show.
Is there a large amount of genital waggling on that show, like that they don't put on the cameras?
Jim actually alerted us. There's a Reddit subsection that's devoted to pervs that have screen capped nudity from the live feeds.
Yeah, there is a lot of nudity on the live feed for sure. Yeah, and of course it, you know, gets blurred on camera. I mean on the network show. But yeah, there's a lot of nudity. They're making their own rules, so a lot of them are walking around naked half the time.
Which is crazy if like you said, you know where they all know where the cameras are, so they must be fairly confident in what they have mm-hmm. going on to parade in front of the cameras.
Well, in general, I mean, they sort of announced that before they were even cast on the show. They basically said, you know, I don't believe in monogamy. I don't believe in a lot of the social mores, like wearing clothing all the time. I think Hex is one who has said on camera many times, what's the big deal? It's the human body. And I can't argue with that. You know, I mean, the social constrictions around nudity are anywhere from difficult to ridiculous in many cases. You know, they're pretty archaic. But at the same time, I was raised that way. I'm not willing to walk around naked. I'm already, you know, my brain's already tainted. You know, I was sufficiently embarrassed by my own body as a young child that I will now never walk around naked in public. But some of these people were not, so they're totally fine with it. They don't care.
Yeah, I don't think that I would be a big fan of doing it myself, but I don't think I'd be offended if other people wanted to.
No, I wouldn't care.
Right.
No, I don't really care what other people want to do, as long as it doesn't in some way impinge on my own freedom or rights. I'm fine with whatever decision people make. I mean, I personally live completely monogamously. That's my choice, but I don't mind people that are polyamorous. I don't mind people that have more than one relationship or more than one spouse. I mean, what do I care? It's, you know, it's their business. Yeah, consenting adults. Sure. I don't. What do I care?
Yeah, I appreciate you doing this. We took up way more time than we asked for. So, Utopia is on Tuesdays and Fridays.
That's correct. Tuesdays and Fridays on Fox.
On Fox. And Bizarro is probably in your newspaper now.
If it's not, you can see it online at bizarrocomics.com.
And they can find you on Facebook?
Absolutely. Facebook.com/bizarrocomics.
And
I'm
Twitter.
On Twitter. On Twitter, I'm Peraro Bizarro.
Perfect. I follow you on both of those.
Thank you so much, Dan.
Thank you, guys. I had a lot of fun.
Definitely appreciate it.
I really thought for sure that my Chuck Berry line was going to go better than that.
Yeah.
Can somebody laugh so that I can edit in their laughter?
Okay. You ready?
Yeah.
Ah, toilet. Have you ever been to one of those little vapor shops?
Vapor shops?
Yeah.
I've never been in one, but man, I see them popping up everywhere.
They are like hipster dens. And that's what they are. They're just, everybody that goes in there is either a 40-year-old mom that's trying to figure out how to quit smoking.
Yeah.
And has this 20-year-old trying to hawk $200 worth of useless shit at her. They get their little smoking rigs together and they tell you all about the cloud chasing and how you're supposed to hook everything up into your your smoking chamber. You see a thing like this?
Yeah.
A thing like this over at this one lounge that my buddy said you need to go to. This right here, I bought two of these, and it ran me $43.
It's a racket, man. No, they got to be making money because there's so many of those places. There's one of those popping up like every other day.
Yep, there's two or three in Florida.
Oh, yeah. No, you drive down the road, and there's one on every corner. All the vaping
people. Jesus.
Are they popping up all over by you, too?
It's not, like, super big by me. They do sell them at the convenience stores, and I actually get... Every other week, I'm getting coupons for, hey, we'll buy you your first one and your first recharge for this brand, or buy one, get one free. And I actually just got one in the mail, like, Views, I think it was, the starter kit was free, and then it came with a coupon that said two refills are free, too.
Don't you think that you're going to find out eventually that those give you dick cancer or something?
It can't be good, and you know what? The worst part of it is I went to that concert with my boy Saturday, his first like actual like rock show, and he, you know, he was having a good time or whatever. But I'm looking around, and there's a bunch of tents selling these fucking vapes and e-cigs and shit. And all I see, as far as the eye can see, is a bunch of fucking idiot-looking cocksuckers token on these things. That look like they should belong to, like, a Chinese man in Big Trouble in Little China who's up to nefarious deeds. You know what I mean? It's like this long pipe where he's just, like, got a pinky up with a super long fingernail, and he, like, takes a big pull on it, and he says, "You're going down, Jack Burton," you know?
Well, Napier's sucking on this thing. It looks like a goddamn, it looks like a tape recorder with a spigot hanging off of it.
Yeah, it looks like a goddamn...
It looks ridiculous.
It looks like a fucking dead man switch.
That looks like a tiny digital camera.
like you're taking a hit off the kill switch, like you hit it and it fucking shuts down the whole power grid.
Yeah, it looks like that thing that Dennis Hopper had in Speed.
Come on, Jack.
Oh, and this is
go below 55.
Pop quiz, hot shot!
What flavor am I toking on now?
No, you're wrong. It's called Rasputin. It only smells of raspberries. And this thing is the most normal fucking one that they had. This guy tried to push this one that looks like a pineapple grenade onto me. They have like 30 different brands that look like lightsabers. They look like these. Christ. They look like giant metal dicks. With little spigots on the end of them, and you're supposed to, you know, warm them up and shove batteries into them, and then stick them in your mouth and suck real hard. And everybody at this one place that I go to, their main clientele is 40-year-old women that get, you know, their kids tell them, "No, Mom, we want you to quit smoking and do the vapor thing." That's what all these guys on YouTube are apparently doing. So... The moms go in there, they have no idea what they're buying, but they have checkbooks, and they'll sign whatever the fuck will keep their kids quiet. So they buy all this shit, it breaks, and then they come back bitch about it, and they're like, "I don't know what to do. We gave you a manual. I mean, it wasn't that hard. You see, you got to hit it 3 times, and then the lights come on, and then you set your voltage to whatever, you know, your little ohm thing says, and there's a conversion chart in the book, and if you don't hit the number, I can't help you. I mean, you're the one who did it. I mean, I told you how to do it. It was in the book in Chinese." Oh, I actually had one of these things break on me. You know those old little sticks that I had? I had those come apart on me, and I was curious about what the inside looked like, and it was some shittily soldered together little circuit board, and the rechargeable battery was held onto this gizmo by this tape, and the tape wasn't like normal Scotch tape. It was, you know that tape that you get like at the grocery store to tape your little bag together for your fruits and veggies sometimes?
Mm-hmm.
It was that, and it had the word fresh on there, and on the other side of it was some god-awful Chinese writing. So whatever plant was putting those together stole a roll of Chinese grocery tape and used that to keep their batteries into their circuits.
intro,
so,
huh?
So, well, so really it's like, it's hornswoggling, really. I mean, it's an industry that's starting to grow, right?
People
don't want to smoke cigarettes anymore. And if it's come to Wisconsin, it's all across the country in a disgusting way. But people don't want to smoke cigarettes anymore. I guess I'd kind of be one of those, even though I love smoking cigarettes. There's nothing that I don't like about it except shortness of breath, coughing like lung cookies up in the morning, and then the smell. Otherwise, I think it's great.
Well, here's the thing about vaping, and this is just me, and I don't want anybody to sue me and like, oh, you said it was fine, and I got pussy cancer from it. Well, you're using the wrong lips to smoke.
My dick got too big because I was vaping because Napier said to.
Said nobody ever. So yeah, with my little vaping thing, I haven't had a cigarette since August, and this is August of last year, not this year.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, that's not very long.
Yeah, so it's been 13 months since I've had a cigarette. All of my wheezing is gone. I can breathe again. I can smell things again. I've thrown away all of the shit in my house that has yellowed because of my cigarettes. And I used to smoke like a goddamn chimney.
But chances are you're going to get dick cancer, and you have to buy all kinds of weird little gadgets.
Oh, yeah. You see this little box?
Yeah.
This little goofy fuck box?
Is it like a chitter box?
No, it's a vapor box. It's a box mod or whatever the fuck you want to call it. This little fucking box ran me $125.
Jesus Christ. I have no problem with the ones that look like cigarettes. You know what I mean? Like, that makes sense to me. Like,
oh, no,
you want to hit this thing. This new wave of wizard fucking pipes I don't go to school at Hogwarts. I just want to smoke a fucking cigarette. So if you can emulate that, that's great.
Oh, but no.
I also heard that you have to hit it like three times as hard as you do a cigarette.
No.
No?
No, not mine. Mine are perfectly fine. It's a little bit less sometimes, a little bit more than a cigarette. Not three times as hard, no. The little ones that light up and they look like cigarettes, yeah, I had trouble with those at first. But these ones where you buy the tank and then you buy the juice to put in the tank and then you buy this fucking contraption that you got to set the voltage to whatever resistance your little tube has in it. That whole thing, that's just amazing. It's tasty and wonderful.
That's nice. So this would be my biggest takeaway. Do you no longer hack up shit in the morning that looks like you could fry it in a frying pan?
No, I just have allergies, but I've had allergies before.
That's excellent. If I could just ditch that.
Oh, and you can taste things and smell things again. You don't stink constantly. You know, your kids aren't going to bitch, Daddy smells like smoking. Well, Sony's going to smell like whiskey, you little fuck.
Smell like both.
This is a good demo reel in case any, like, online e-cigarette companies, like, want to hire us to be their spokesperson.
Oh, if Views wants to sponsor us, who's the other big ones?
I think that we could probably get some kind of endorsement deal out of this.
You know, easily. I think we talked about this. Those are the sponsorships that we need to be going after, are e-cigarettes and, pocket pussies, those kind of things.
Pocket pussies. We are the ideal marketplace for pocket pussies. You send us a pocket pussy, we'll even do like a review. I'll fuck it.
Do it too.
Sure.
Shit, send us three of them. All three of us will do it.
We'll fuck it. Why not?
I'll try to fart into it to blow it up.
That'll be like the Consumer Reports test by Napier. Oh, I tried to shit in this thing and it would not explode. A+.
I shoved this directly into my anus. You can still see the skid marks on it. Frank, Frank, do we have a picture of this? Well, see you in hell, faggots.
I want you to know it's over.
Well. Bye.
Thank you for listening to this installment of the Wheelbarrow Full of Dicks Internet Radio Program. We are live every Monday night at 9, 8 Central on Radio FUBAR. You can download past episodes on Stitcher, iTunes, or our website, wfodicks.podbean.com. If there's any kinds of thumbs or stars that you can click for us, we do appreciate it. It does help with the visibility of the show. You can follow us on Twitter at WFODix. You can follow Drunk at DrunkardSTL. You can follow Travis at ProduceTravis. You can also follow some of our favorite Napier quotes at Napierisms. We're on Facebook as well, facebook.com/WFODix. You can email us at wfodshow@gmail.com or leave a voicemail message at 314-266-WFOD. Radio FUBAR is on 24 hours a day with great content. RadioFUBAR.com. Check out some of the other shows. Let them know that we sent you. There are shirts available in their shop. You can also click the Amazon link that will take you to Amazon.com where you can do your shopping as normal. It does help the station. They do get a kickback. It costs you no extra to do so. Thanks again. We'll talk to you next week and tell a friend.